Things pick up for me once they've announced two tributes from the same district can live, and I shout out PETA's name and then clap my hands over my mouth. If I've seemed indifferent to him earlier, I make up for it now by finding him, nursing him back to health, going to the feast for the medicine, and being very free with my kisses. Objectively, I can see the Mutt's and Cato's death are as gruesome as ever, but again, I feel it happens to people I have never met. And then comes the moment with the berries. I can hear the audience hushing one another, not wanting to miss anything. A wave of gratitude to the filmmakers sweeps over me when they end not with the announcement of our victory, but with me pounding on the glass door of the hovercraft, screaming PETA's name as they try to revive him. In terms of survival, it's my best moment all night. The anthem's playing yet again, and we rise as President Snow himself takes the stage, followed by a little girl carrying a cushion that holds the crown. There's just one crown, though, and you can hear the crowd's confusion. Whose head will he place it on? Until President Snow gives it a twist and it separates into two halves. He places the first around PETA's brow with a smile. He's still smiling when he settles the second on my head, but his eyes, just inches from mine, are as unforgiving as a snake's. That's when I know that even though both of us would have eaten the berries, I am to blame for having the idea. I'm the instigator. I'm the one to be punished. Much bowing and cheering follows. My arm is about to fall off from waving when Caesar Flickerman finally bids the audience goodnight, reminding them to tune in tomorrow for the final interviews, as if they have a choice. PETA and I are whisked to the president's mansion for the victory banquet, where we have very little time to eat as Capitol officials and particularly generous sponsors elbow one another out of the way as they try to get their picture with us. Face after beaming face flashes by, becoming increasingly intoxicated as the evening wears on. Occasionally, I catch a glimpse of Haymitch, which is reassuring, or President Snow, which is terrifying, but I keep laughing and thanking people and smiling as my picture is taken. The one thing I never do is let go of PETA's hand. The sun is just peeking over the horizon when we straggle back to the 12th floor of the training center. I think now I'll finally get a word alone with PETA. But Haymitch sends him off with Portia to get something fitted for the interview and personally escorts me to my door. Why can't I talk to him? I ask.
Plenty of time for talk when we get home, says Haymitch. Go to bed, you're on air at 2.
Despite Haymitch's running interference, I'm determined to see PETA privately. After I toss and turn for a few hours, I slip into the hall. My first thought is to check the roof, but it's empty. Even the city streets far below are deserted after the celebration last night. I go back to bed for a while and then decide to go directly to his room, but when I try to turn the knob, I find my own bedroom door has been locked from the outside. I suspect Haymitch initially, but then there's a more insidious fear that the Capitol may be monitoring and confining me. I've been unable to escape since the Hunger Games began, but this feels different, much more personal. This feels like I've been imprisoned for a crime and I'm awaiting sentencing. I quickly get back in bed and pretend to sleep until Effie Trinket comes to alert me to the start of another big, big, big day. I have about 5 minutes to eat a bowl of hot grain and stew before the prep team descends. All I have to say is, the crowd loved you, and it's unnecessary to speak for the next couple of hours. When Cinna comes in, he shoos them out and dresses me in a white gauzy dress and pink shoes. Then he personally adjusts my makeup until I seem to radiate a soft, rosy glow. We make idle chit-chat, but I'm afraid to ask him anything of real importance because, after the incident with the door, I can't shake the feeling that I'm being watched constantly. The interview takes place right down the hall in the sitting room. A space has been cleared and the love seat has been moved in and surrounded by vases of red and pink roses. There are only a handful of cameras to record the event. No live audience, at least. Caesar Flickerman gives me a warm hug when I come in.
Congratulations, Katniss! How are you faring?
Fine. Nervous about the interview, I say.
Don't be. We're going to have a fabulous time, he says, giving my cheek a reassuring pat.
I'm not good at talking about myself, I say.
Nothing you say will be wrong, he says.
And I think, oh, Caesar, if only that were true. But actually, President Snow may be arranging some sort of accident for me as we speak. Then Pete is there, looking handsome in red and white, pulling me off to the side.
I hardly get to see you. Haymitch seems bent on keeping us apart.
Haymitch is actually bent on keeping us alive, but there are too many ears listening, so I just say, yes, he's gotten very responsible lately.
Well, there's just this, and we go home. Then he can't watch us all the time, says Peeta.
I feel a sort of shiver run through me, and there's no time to analyze why, because they're ready for us. We sit somewhat formally on the love seat, but Caesar says,
oh, go ahead and curl up next to him if you want. It looked very sweet.
So I tuck my feet up, and Peeta pulls me in close to him. Someone counts backward, and just like that, we're being broadcast live to the entire country. Caesar Flickerman is wonderful, teasing, joking, getting choked up when the occasion presents itself. He and Peeta already have the rapport they established that night of the first interview, that easy banter, so I just smile a lot and try to speak as little as possible. I mean, I have to talk some, but as soon as I can, I redirect the conversation back to Peeta. Eventually, though, Caesar begins to pose questions that insist on fuller answers.
Well, Peeta, we know from our days in the cave that it was love at first sight for you from what, age 5? Caesar says.
From the moment I laid eyes on her, says Peeta.
But Katniss, what a ride for you. I think the real excitement for the audience was watching you fall for him. When did you realize you were in love with him?
Asks Caesar. Oh, that's a hard one. I give a faint, breathy laugh and look down at my hands. Help.
Well, I know when it hit me. The night when you shouted out his name from that tree, says Caesar. Thank you, Caesar, I think, and then go with his idea. Yes, I guess that was it. I mean, until that point, I just tried not to think about what my feelings might be, honestly, because it was so confusing and it only made things worse if I actually cared about him. But then, in the tree, everything changed, I say.
Why do you think that was? Urges Caesar.
Maybe because for the first time, there was a chance I could keep him, I say. Behind a cameraman, I see Haymitch give a sort of huff with relief, and I know I've said the right thing. Caesar pulls out a handkerchief and has to take a moment because he's so moved. I can feel Peeta press his forehead into my temple, and he asks,
so now that you've got me, what are you going to do with me?
I turn into him, put you somewhere you can't get hurt. And when he kisses me, people in the room actually sigh. For Caesar, this is a natural place to segue into all the ways we did get hurt in the arena, from burns to stings to wounds. But it's not until we get around to the mutts that I forget I'm on camera. When Caesar asks Peeta how his new leg is working out. New leg? I say, and I can't help reaching out and pulling up the bottom of Peeta's pants.
Oh no.
I whisper, taking in the metal and plastic device that has replaced his flesh.
No one told you?
Asks Caesar gently. I shake my head.
I haven't had the chance, says Peeta with a slight shrug.
It's my fault, I say, because I used that tourniquet.
Yes, it's your fault I'm alive, says Peeta.
He's right, says Caesar. He'd have bled to death for sure without it.
I guess this is true.
but I can't help feeling upset about it to the extent that I'm afraid I might cry. And then I remember everyone in the country is watching me, so I just bury my face in Peeta's shirt.